ruined their fairy tale. Her soul's wish for him had been wrong. And yet, Agatha found herself tilting farther in her chair, Sophie's hand still too far away to see. She reclined even more, teetering on one chair leg until Hester's iced desktop was in front of Sophie's wrist, magnifying it like a lens. Agatha's eyes widened, recognizing the faint wounds in her friend's creamy skin, patterned with deep needle pricks. Spirik cuts. Where had Sophie encountered Spiriks? In the woods, of course, Agatha reminded herself. That's where they'd attacked her, hadn't they? And yet, Sophie's wounds still looked fresh. Sophie turned to her, and Agatha's chair nearly toppled. Come to the library with me? Sophie smiled, helping her up. 10 minutes before fourth session. We can look at spying spells. Agatha smiled back and grabbed her bag, shoving Spiriks from her mind. No more doubts, no more distrust, she thought, following her best friend upstairs. She'd learned her lesson with the wart. Melting black candles lined the walls of Evil Hall with yellow-green flames the color of snake eyes. In the center of the room, 12 white coffin beds lay in a row, each with the body of a male teacher from good or evil. Tanned, mustached Professor Espada, who taught swordplay to Everboys. Pimpled, bald Professor Manley, who taught uglification to Neverboys. Wizened, doddering Professor Lucas, who taught chivalry. Castor, who led henchman training, his brother Pollux's head missing from their two-headed dog body. Beazle, Evil's red-skinned dwarf next to a pack of forest group leaders, an ogre, a centaur, and a sprite among them. Even Albemarle, the spectacled woodpecker who'd once tallied Good's rankings, all breathing in sync, their sleeping faces peaceful. On the floor in front of them, Tristan slouched, surrounded by open spellbooks from the Library of Vice. "We've been up all night," he yawned, pawing his red hair. "The Dean's magic is too strong."
"Well, we'll all be slaves unless we break it," Tedros mumbled, rifling pages of Sleep No More. "You don't know what they're like together, those two girls. They'll make mincemeat of us if the boys don't get behind this trial and start tryouts now."
He grabbed another book.
"But we need our teachers back if we're to have any chance of winning."
"How about I go and check on the Storian?" Tristan said quickly. "Just to make sure."
"Look, it's a sleeping curse. It has to have a cure."
"Not unless you have a man-wolf handy," Tristan snorted, tossing aside spells for sleeping beauties. Tedros closed his last book a moment later. He saw the dark circles under Tristan's eyes, obscuring his freckles.
"All right,"
the prince caved, standing up.
"Let's go back."
He suddenly noticed the book Tristan had tossed open to a cobwebbed page. Tedros slid it closer with his foot. Chapter 14. Sleep Spell Counter Curses. Author's note. The sleep curse remedies in this and most books are applicable exclusively to slumbering maidens, since they are the most likely victims. Males, of course, can be roused only by a man-wolf's scream. In absence of a live man-wolf, you may puree the lungs of a dead one and pour the draught into the sleeping man's ear. The Waking Princess Elixir. Ingredients. 2 cat claws, 1 bushel of fresh mint.
"Hate to tell you," Tristan said impatiently, "but Seder told us last year, man-wolves only live in Bloodbrook."
"Funny."
Tedros looked up, eyes twinkling.
"Isn't that where Hort's from?"
Sophie flung the Sneak and Spy handbook onto a heap of discarded books and squinted up at the Library of Virtue's 2-floor gold colosseum, dominated by a sundial clock. It'll take us months to go through all these.
They're all the same spells, Agatha frowned, sitting at her table and paging through Snoop Spells Volume 2. Invisibility, disguise, advanced mogrifications, nothing they wouldn't expect. We need to be in the boys' school long enough to break into Tedros's tower. Could take us days.
Days? With those dirty princes? We'll die of fumes,
Sophie moaned. She squinted at the leathery tortoise behind the reception desk, asleep on a massive library log.
Is that thing ever awake?
She turned and saw Agatha frowning at a few butterflies that had fluttered in.
Don't fret, Sophie whispered. We're the perfect team, remember? Think of how you sneaked into the trial last year.
This is different, Sophie. We need help, Agatha said quickly. And as long as the Dean's listening, we can't get it. With their schedules separating, Sophie headed to Female Talents with Hester and Anadil, while Agatha caught up with Dot in History of Heroines.
Still nothing, Dot said, seeing Agatha's face as she settled next to her in Good Hall's calcified pews.
Daddy would know what to do, but he's on the run from Maid Marian. She's enslaving all the men in Sherwood Forest after she found out Robin has a wandering eye.
Dot sighed. Could have told her that myself.
Kiko's head poked beside Agatha's from the pew behind.
Eee! You finally get to see the best class.
Wish you were here the first week. We went inside Cinderella's story. Did you know she just married her prince until he signed his kingdom over to her? Then she had him thrown in the dungeon and ruled herself, pretending their marriage was happy. Turns out boys have been covering up the truth about fairy tales for ages just to make girls seem weak and stupid.
Then we went inside Goldilocks's story and watched her tame three bears and turn them into fur coats, and then we went inside Snow White's when she poisoned those sexist dwarfs with apples.
Huh? Agatha said, confounded. First off, nothing you just said sounds anything like the truth. Second of all, how do you go inside stories?
Kiko smiled mischievously.
You'll see.
The Dean clacked in through the double doors, heels echoing on stone.
In addition to attacking our team, the boys will no doubt lace the Blue Forest with deadly traps. As will we, she said, hips swishing up the aisle to the wooden lectern. But a boy's mind is perhaps the deadliest trap, girls. When their dignity is on the line, they will resort to desperate tactics, perverse and unimaginable. You must be prepared.
From inside the lectern, she pulled a massively thick text, A Student's Revised History of the Woods by August Seder, and opened to a page in the middle. The Dean's disembodied voice boomed over the hall as if coming out of the book.
Chapter 26, The Rise and Fall of King Arthur.
In a tiny cloud of mist, a ghostly three-dimensional scene melted into view atop the book page, a silent living diorama of King Arthur in his gold crown and night robe stalking through the halls of Camelot. Agatha could hardly see it from the back pews. It's so small.
Wait, Kiko said behind her.
The Dean raised up the book and, with a gap-toothed grin, blew on the phantom scene. With a fizzling whoosh, the scene shattered into a million glittered shards and crashed over the students like a glass sandstorm. Agatha shielded her eyes and felt her body floating through space, until her feet touched ground. She slowly peeked through her fingers. Good Hall had disappeared, along with the pews and the rest of the girls. She was standing in a dark wood chamber hall, the air thick and hazy around her, giving the room a vaporous feel, as if it wasn't quite real. She squinted and saw a bearded, powerfully built, grey-haired man
in a wolf fur night robe and gold crown, tiptoeing towards her. Agatha gasped. Kiko was right. She was inside the book's scene. Her hand reached through the smoky air towards a wall painted with paisley bronze patterns, and her fingers went straight through like a ghost's. King Arthur slipped past her, flickering and distorting slightly like a phantom, bare feet pattering across the rose-coloured carpet towards the end of the hall. Agatha recognised him from the square jaw and crystal blue eyes he'd passed on, as well as the gold-hilted sword tucked into his robe. The same sword she'd taken from his son's hands 2 nights before. Arthur met Guinevere at the School for Good and Evil, before he became king, the dean's voice narrated. From the day they met, he knew she despised him. Still, he forced her into marriage, for boys are brutal, ruthless creatures, and none more than Arthur. Agatha squinted hard at the Phantom King. Was any of this the truth, or just another of the Dean's twisted tales? She watched Arthur approach the last door in the hall, the King careful not to make a sound. Guinevere had one condition, however, that each night she and the king sleep in separate chambers. The dean continued. Arthur could not deny the request, for Guinevere behaved the perfect wife and birthed him the wretched son he'd always wanted. Yet still the king couldn't sleep. Night after night, Arthur tried to see inside his queen's room, but her door was always locked. Until one night. Now Agatha saw what the king had. Tonight the queen's door was cracked open. Following behind Arthur, Agatha leaned over him and peeked through it, just in time to see Guinevere sneak out her window, slide down its curtain, and disappear into the night. The next morning, the queen was at breakfast, smiling and agreeable as always, the dean's voice said. Arthur said nothing of what he'd seen. The scene vanished around Agatha, instantly replaced by a dusty cave, littered with burbling laboratory vessels, shelves of murky vials and jars, and dozens of half-filled notebooks. Now Arthur was arguing with an ancient, scrawny man, a stark white beard down to his stomach. Arthur tried invisibility, trail tracking, mogrification, everything he'd learned at the School for Good, but still couldn't find where Guinevere disappeared to each night. His lifelong adviser, Merlin, refused to help, insisting matters of the heart were beyond magic. Merlin stormed out of his cave. Arthur pursued him, but stopped suddenly. He peered closer at one of Merlin's open notebooks, took it into his hands. Then Arthur saw something Merlin had been brewing down in his lair. Arthur's eyes flared wider. Something so daring, so dangerous, he knew it was his only chance. Hands trembling, Arthur ripped out the page. The scene flashed to a hooded figure in a forest, galloping past Agatha on a black horse, camouflaged by the night. That evening, Arthur had guards seal Guinevere's windows. Cloaked in a hood, he climbed out from the adjacent room to find a horse waiting. The horse came to a stop in a pitch-dark clearing. Agatha watched a thin, shadowed man creep out from behind a far tree and slowly approach the horse's rider. But, shrouded completely in his cloak and hood, King Arthur didn't dismount. He just waited as the shadowy man grew closer, closer, each unable to see the other, until Agatha finally saw moonlight spill on the shadowed man's light brown skin, hooked nose, and knight's uniform. It was Lancelot, the friend Arthur loved so much. He called him a brother.
the man Guinevere had come to every night.
Lancelot drew nearer to the horse, the hooded cloak still drawn over the rider's face. Lancelot hesitated, sensing something wrong, but then saw delicate white-slippered feet peeking from beneath the rider's cloak. Agatha stared at those girlish feet, confused. As Lancelot smiled lovingly and moved closer to the horse, Agatha watched as Lancelot reached up, gently pulled back the rider's hood, revealing King Arthur's crystal blue eyes. Agatha choked. His eyes weren't a man's any more. In a flash, Arthur drew a blade, stabbing Lancelot's stomach. The horse sprinted away, returning the king back to the castle. The scene melted to vapours, and Agatha was back in Good Hall with the silent, stunned class. "The spell made King Arthur a girl," Beatrix cried, aghast. "A boy became a girl." "Just long enough for the king to see his queen had made a fool of him," the dean said. "But by the time Arthur reverted from the spell and returned to Camelot, Guinevere was gone. He sent his men to finish off Lancelot, but the knight too had vanished. Neither he nor the queen was ever seen again." Agatha couldn't breathe, still questioning everything she'd just seen. And yet she needed this story to be true. She needed it to save her and Sophie's life. She needed the spell, she blurted, lurching to her feet. "Where's Merlin's spell?"
"Lost, like all of his spells, of course," the dean replied, closing the book. "But the spell is hardly the point, dear."
She looked up at Agatha with a daring smile.
"It's that a boy was clever and disciplined enough to find it."
As Agatha sank down, girls buzzed feverishly around her, dissecting every moment of their trip through time.
"Told you it was a good class," Kiko whispered behind her.
But Agatha slumped deeper, for all it had given her was more dead ends. Her and Sophie's only hope was that the baboonish boys she'd seen across the bay, lacking in cleverness or discipline, had hit a dead end of their own.
"I want to be on the trial team," said Hort, still in underpants, voice resounding in Evil Hall. "That's my condition."
"Sorry, Hort, but we need the strongest boys," said Tedros, after he'd sent Tristan away for this negotiation. "That's why we brought in the princes. Only Arik and I don't have to try out."
"You need a man-wolf scream. You need my villain talent. Then give me a spot on the team," Hort snapped. He looked down at his underpants. "And a new uniform."
"Look, it's just one scream."
"No, you look. My dad said villains can't love, and I tried to love," Hort said, beady eyes gluing to the floor. "Chasing after Sophie like I was an ever when I'm just... Well, look at me."
He rubbed at his whiskery cheeks.
"Made a fool of myself. And my dad. Least I can do is win the treasure and bury him. You understand that, don't you?"
He looked up at Tedros.
"Trying to make him proud, even if he's dead?"
Tedros's jaw softened. He could see the flush across Hort's chest, his bottom lip trembling. The boy had been born with none of his good fortune, and yet they were so much the same.
"No one will fight like me," Hort pleaded, looking like a shivering squirrel. "No one."
The prince folded his arms, trying valiantly to ignore him.
"Hort, these girls want me dead. This isn't like last year. This is a real trial, with all our lives at stake. And I'm the leader of this school, and responsible for the boys' safety, and they're already revolting over the fact they might end up slaves."
Hort was whimpering like a homeless puppy. Tedros gritted his teeth.
So what would it look like if I just... If... The prince slumped, exhaling. Arek will shoot me.
Hort beamed sharp yellow teeth. He whirled to the sleeping teachers, unleashing a scream so primal his body jerked into contortions and so loud that Tedros quailed against the wall, covering his ears. By the time the prince looked up, Hort wasn't human any more. He was swathed in a man-wolf's dark fur over bulging muscles, erect on two legs, roaring and roaring until he finally ran out of breath.
"Told you I last longer,"
Hort growled as he listened proudly to boys' terrified shouts upstairs, torn from their sleep. They weren't the only ones woken. Slowly, the teachers stirred in their coffins, one by one. Manly was the first to rise, jowly, pockmarked face flickering in torchlight. Tedros grinned and extended his hand.
"Professor, welcome back to the school for boy—"
"Fine mess you've gotten yourself into. A castle full of filthy strangers, a trial with ludicrous terms, terms you trapped us into once the girls agreed,"
Manly sneered, tramping for the door.
"Slaves to girls. Imagine what the stories would look like with the Storian in Dean Seder's hands. Men dying at the end of every tale. Men on a losing streak, worse than evils.
And yet, a silver lining if we win,"
Professor Espada said, glowering at the two boys as his pointy black boots hit the ground.
"Win this trial, and those two cursed readers die. Their fairy tale instantly undone. Our school's back to good and evil, like they always were."
"10 days to right this ship, then,"
Albemarle the woodpecker said, trailing after them with the rest of the forest group leaders.
"I'll prepare the schedules."
"I'll ready the classrooms,"
said Chivalry's Professor Lucas.
"And I'll wake the sorry losers up,"
Castor roared, shaking out his fur. Beazle burped with glee and ran after him.
But what about me?"
Tedros called behind them.
"You can compete for the trial team like everyone else,"
Manly spat back.
"Compete?"
Tedros blurted.
"How about me?"
Hort spluttered, shrinking to human.
"He said he ain't in charge any more."
Manly's voice echoed as he vanished down the hall's stairs. Hort glowered at Tedros. Betrayed. The prince went red, straining for voice.
"But how... how did they know?"
Castor swiveled from the door, raybeard and bloodshot.
"Just 'cause we're asleep don't mean we can't hear."
For 5 nights, Sophie, Agatha, and the witches met in the supper hall for book club, debating possible schemes to get the Storian and wish themselves home. And yet none seemed without serious risk. With each passing day, Agatha grew more and more doubtful of every new spell, Sophie more and more sharp with her, and both more and more convinced the trial would happen as planned. Together, they decided that come the 6th night, they'd pick a plan, for their time was running short. At 8:30, Agatha and Dot swept down to the supper hall, frantically comparing spells, only to find Sophie, Hester, and Anadil standing outside the door.
"We have a problem."
Hester stepped aside, revealing the sign pasted over their book clubs. "Play auditions tonight. A pageant history of female accomplishment. Note, if no one shows, there will be no play. Asterisk. Challenge exemptions for all those who do not show. Professor Sheiks, play director. Asterisk. Challenge exemptions are prohibited per the Dean. Pollux, play director's supervisor and creative consultant." "Can't we move somewhere else?"
Dot asked.
It's the only place butterflies don't come, worried Sophie. We've already lost a week. We need a plan tonight.
The girls fell quiet. Guess we're all auditioning for a pageant history of female accomplishment, Agatha crabbed. Then she caught Sophie's excited look and frowned. You're not getting a part. 10 minutes later, Sophie was cavorting in front of the curtain on a makeshift stage in the supper hall, delivering an inexplicable monologue in an inexplicable accent.
Hear me, Prince Humperdinck. Do not be fooled by my beauty and charm. I am a simple woman, simple in mind, simple in heart, but do not take that for simple in spirit.
She looked down at Professor Sheik's and Pollux's head perched on the table, both blinking at her.
I thought it was quite good, Pollux wisped.
A hand yanked her behind the curtain.
Was it too subtle? Sophie said, eyeing the paltry line of girls waiting their turns.
The only thing subtle is your chance to live, Hester seethed. We're deciding on a plan, and we're deciding on a plan now. Everyone give their best idea.
I found a spider sling spell that sticks you to ceilings,
Anadil offered, leaning against the window.
You could hide in the vents for days.
And where do I bathe? Said Sophie. Where do I eat?
You eat?
Anadil said, gaping.
We could send my demon to steal the pen, Hester mulled. Surely he'll get past the shield.
And if he gets caught, your demon dies and so do you, Sophie returned. And now that I think about it, it's a lovely idea. What if I turn you into vegetables? Dot offered.
Boys don't eat vegetables. Everyone stared at her.
Aggie, Sophie said, surely you found something. Agatha had been quietly shifting in her clumps during all this, for she had been counting on the witches to find something foolproof. But now she had to face what she'd suspected all along. There isn't anything safe, no matter what we choose, she said. She looked up at Sophie, tearing.
This is my fault. We're going to end up in that trial, and it's my fault.
But... We can't die, Aggie, Sophie rasped. Not when we're finally friends again.
Agatha shook her head. They'll find us, Sophie. Any of these spells, they'll find us. She stopped because her eyes had caught something out the window.
Aggie?
Sophie asked. Agatha put her hands on the window as the witches crowded around her.
Oh, it's just Helga,
Sophie huffed, watching the frumpy, lavender-dressed gnome scurrying through the blue forest to her burrow by the brook.
Strange, though. She looks skinnier.
I didn't know gnomes go on diets.
And her hair is different, too. Looks like a...
Now all the girls pressed their noses to the glass in shock.
It can't be,
Hester gasped. For as the gnome slid back into Helga's burrow, in Helga's dress and Helga's hat, a face that wasn't Helga's peeked up through the hole to make sure no one saw it.
It was a girl during class. It's been a girl every day, Dot said.
It's impossible.
But it wasn't, Agatha thought, mirroring a dean's daring smile. For she'd seen the spell that had made it possible. Lost, and now found. The spell that had hidden Yuba in the enemy's castle all this time. And the spell that would now help her and Sophie do the same.
Chapter 15 The Five Rules. I don't understand, Sophie whispered to Agatha. What does all this have to do with getting into the boys' school? Agatha ignored her, glaring at Helga the gnome, bound to a frilly rocking chair, long white hair covered in kale flakes. "Either tell us how you do it, Yuba, or we give you to the dean."
"I find your charges deeply offensive," Helga retorted, her voice tight and pitchy. "All males have been evicted."
"We saw you, Yuba," said Hester, arms crossed next to Dot. "We saw your face."
"Yuba? Me? Preposterous."
Helga scowled, struggling for the white staff out of reach.
"Now leave at once, before I call the dean myself."
"Please, we need your help," Agatha begged. "But how can she help us with boys? And why do you keep calling her Yuba?" Sophie badgered, pointing at the dowdy gnome. "I feel like I'm missing something."
"A brain," Hester murmured.
With the butterflies generally dormant at night, the girls had waited until after midnight before each took a turn sneaking into the blue forest. Anadil was caught by Pollux and had to abort the plan. There was no way to squeeze through the tiny gnome hole they'd seen, but Dot had turned the ground around it into kale, and the rest stomped through, stunning Helga in her lair. While the witches tied the gnome to the chair, Agatha poked around the tiny furniture and bookshelves for signs of a male inhabitant, but the doily linens, abundance of flower pots, and lavender wallpaper all had a decidedly female touch. Sophie frowned as she sniffed a flower pot. "Strange, though," she said airily. "Never met a girl who likes hydrangeas." Agatha humphed at Helga, as if this idiocy would have to suffice as proof. "We know about Merlin's spell, Yuba. We saw it in our book. We know you used it."
"The dean has revised all her brother's texts to reflect her own agenda," Helga shot back, reddening. "Besides, what do I know of Merlin's spells?"
"Only what you taught Merlin yourself," a voice said. They all swiveled to Dot in front of a bookshelf, peering at My Life in Magic by Merlin of Camelot. She held open the first page, eyeing the gnome. "To Helga and Yuba, my greatest teacher." "Should be teachers, shouldn't it?" Dot said. The den was quiet. Agatha kneeled down in front of the old gnome. "Surviving fairy tales. That's what you teach." She took Helga's wrinkled hand. "And we can't survive ours without you." Helga's grey pupils glued to the ground, unable to look at her student for a long time. Slowly, her long white hair retracted into her skull, growing scratchy and short. The grooves of her face magically deepened, and the skin hardened to a leathery tan beneath a growing white beard. Her cheeks hollowed, her nose fattened, her eyebrows bushied, her body burlying to a barrel shape, until at last Yuba the gnome gazed up at his former students in the same lavender dress and wobbly heels.
"Do you mind if I change?"
he asked quietly. Sophie gawped at her old forest group teacher, morphed from a girl into a boy. She twirled to Agatha, appalled. "That's how you want us to get in the boys' school? By turning us into gnomes?" Agatha banged her head against the wall. On a dusty wool couch, Agatha, Sophie, Hester, and Dot held mugs of turnip root tea, eyes flicking back and forth as Yuba paced the room in his belted green coat and orange cone hat.
"The irony of teaching is we often teach what we can no longer do. Though I've been teaching students for 115 years, how to survive in the endless woods. I could hardly survive a day outside these gates any more,"
the gnome said, no longer straining to disguise his voice.
"When the eviction happened, I needed to remain here safely until the balance was restored. Disguising as Helga was the only way. No one would ever find me out. No one would have a clue."
He glowered at Sophie and Agatha, squished next to each other.
"But given what you've done to the rules of good and evil, I'm not surprised you're back to ruin the rules of boys and girls."
Sophie leaned to Agatha. "I really don't see how turning into gnomes ruins any..." Agatha elbowed her, and Sophie shut up. Yuba slurped from his teacup and sat back in his rocking chair.
"Gnomes are different from other creatures in the woods for two reasons,"
he said.
"From your classwork, Esther can surely tell us the first."
"They're always neutral in war," Hester answered confidently.
"Indeed. Gnomes have never once been drawn into a conflict in over 2,000 years. We've maintained peace between ourselves and others without exception."
Sophie yawned and started pouring more tea.
"The second reason we're different is less known and won't be found in your books,"
said Yuba.
"Gnomes are born with the ability to change sex."
Sophie missed her cup and poured tea into Hester's lap.
"Temporarily, of course,"
the gnome continued, ignoring Hester's loud curses.
"Boy gnomes can turn into girl gnomes, and girls into boys, at will, until they come of age, when they revert permanently to the sex that they were born."
Now Sophie dropped the whole pot on Hester. "No wonder Daddy never let us near young gnomes in Sherwood Forest," Dot marveled as Hester beat Sophie with a pillow. "Probably thought they were contagious."
"The sheriff is not alone in his thinking,"
Yuba sighed.
"And yet, these two properties of gnomes were of deep interest to Merlin, the greatest student to ever attend the school for good and evil. In his free time, and often in this very cave, he probed and studied gnome biology so relentlessly his ranks suffered. It is why he was ultimately tracked as a helper to Arthur's father instead of as a hero of his own tale."
"But why would Merlin care whether gnomes were peaceful or changed sexes?" Agatha asked.
"Because he believed the two linked,"
said Yuba.
"He believed the brief period of playful transformation allowed gnomes to be more sensitive and aware than other creatures. If there was a way for humans to have that experience, even for a moment, you too would be as peace-loving as the gnomes. All wars preempted, all notions of good and evil dissolved. Mankind perfected."
Yuba paused.
"He was such a passionate fellow. I couldn't help but believe him."
Now Sophie and Hester were both paying attention. "So you helped him find a spell?" Agatha asked. "A spell to turn human boys into girls and girls into boys?"
"A highly fleeting spell that would work on any species,"
said Yuba.
"Better to do it under my supervision than attempt such a dangerous spell on his own."
The gnome swallowed ruefully.
"Long after he left the school for good and evil, he'd return to work with me on the formula. Indeed, it is why I still had the recipe, for I often spent free moments fine-tuning and testing it on myself before his next visit. It took us 20 years to perfect the spell, until Arthur used it to attack Lancelot for all the wrong reasons. Sabotage, subterfuge, revenge. instead of Merlin's spell bringing peace, now word spread of a curse that could bring down kingdoms and destroy men for all time.
Tears glistened in Yuba's eyes.
Merlin fled just before the armies came for him. But they incinerated the lifetime of work he'd left behind. Without his wife and his beloved advisor, Arthur succumbed to drunkenness and heartbreak. Neither I nor anyone else ever saw Merlin again.
Yuba put down his rattling cup.
Professor Seder later effaced the episode from his histories, afraid of the embarrassment it would cause Arthur's son. But the Dean has no such consideration for a boy.
Nor do we, Sophie lashed, standing up. That boy is planning our execution as we speak.
And Merlin's spell is our only way into his castle, Agatha insisted.
So if you'll please hand it over, said Sophie, huffing towards Yuba. My friend and I can go home.
She paused mid-stride, blinking.
Aggie, darling, not to be gauche, but how exactly would Merlin's spell help us? I don't mean to imply that our night has been a complete goose chase, or that you've poorly thought this out, but what could we possibly do with some ludicrous spell that turns boys into girls and girls into...
Sophie's eyes suddenly popped.
Here it comes,
Dot mumbled. Sophie swiveled to Agatha.
But you don't want us to... You weren't talking about...
And if you find the Storian,
the gnome said to Agatha,
there will be peace.
Agatha gave him a sad smile. A wish started this war, Yuba. Now a wish can end it.
A boy! Sophie screeched, clutching her stomach. Aggie, you want me to be a... boy?
It's the only way to wish for each other without Tedros discovering us, Agatha said, finally looking at her.
Boys? Boys?
Yuba cleared his throat behind them.
I'm afraid only one can go.
What? Agatha said, spinning.
I left my notes in Sheba's classroom when the butterflies heard me collecting ingredients, said Yuba,
hunching over the flower pot with the hydrangeas. He dug his fist into the dirt and withdrew a small glass vial shaped like a teardrop, filled with a fluorescing violet brew.
When I returned later, the recipe was gone. I am old and dodgy of memory, and cannot reconstruct it, no matter how hard I try. This is my last dose of the potion.
He looked up at the two girls.
Enough for one of you to last 3 days in the boy's castle.
Agatha whitened. But how will you teach class? How will you stay at this school?
I'm willing to risk my life, if it means peace,
Yuba replied. Neither Sophie nor Agatha said anything for a moment, staring at the smoky potion in his hand.
I'll go, said Agatha, lurching for the vial. No, they'll kill you, cried Sophie, grabbing her. We can't be apart now, not after everything.
Someone has to bring the pen back, Agatha said, resting free.
Send Hester!
Sophie shrieked, shoving the tattooed witch forward.
Me?
Hester roared, shoving her back.
Now I'm being dragged into this?
Look, this is my idea, so I'll go, Agatha snapped.
Or Dot, Sophie said, goosing Dot forward. She's always trying to be useful. I don't want to be a boy,
Dot screeched, and ran around the sofa while Sophie chased her.
We'll draw lots,
Sophie gasped, grabbing one of Yuba's notebooks, desperately ripping up pages. Yuba stayed her hand.
Lives at stake, two schools at war? And you expect to draw lots? No, 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 he said, tucking the vial into his coat. It should be me who goes, of course. But boys will surely suspect a gnome in their midst, given our penchant for peace. And if I can't go, there's only one way to settle this, indeed. A proper challenge, just as this school requires. And there's certainly no reason it shouldn't be Hester or Dot who goes, or even Annadil, since you'll no doubt betray everything to her that happened here tonight.
The girls goggled at him.
Tomorrow, we choose our boy,
Yuba said, shunting them all out.
Forest groups exist precisely to winnow those who can survive in the bleakest circumstances versus those destined to fail.
As the girl scrambled from his kale-crusted burrow and towards the tunnel, Sophie brightened with relief. See, Hester will get the pen. Hester wins everything.
Never making friends with Evers again,
Hester boiled, shoving Agatha hard as she tramped into the trees. Agatha watched her trail away, stiffening with guilt. I should be the one to go, she said to Sophie. How can he leave this up to a challenge? It doesn't make any sense. Dot butted between them, licking kale off her fingers. That's 'cause you haven't heard the 5 rules.
I say, we fail on purpose,
Annadil harumphed.
And end up a newt during tracking, no thank you,
Hester grumped, the 2 witches in black traipsing behind Sophie, Agatha, and blue-uniformed girls flooding through the gates for forest groups.
What I don't understand is how you or I bring the story in back. The schoolmaster's tower follows wherever the pen goes. If we steal it, the tower will chase us.
Suppose I win, Dot fretted, catching up. I beat everyone in the poisoned apple-making tryout this morning.
That's because it involved food,
Annadil muttered. Humming a cheerful tune, Sophie noticed Agatha still looking glum after last night. Aggie, it really is the best solution, Sophie whispered to her once a few butterflies flew over. Hester will get the pen in no time. We'll write the end before the dean suspects a thing. Despite her unease over dragging the witches into this, Agatha knew Sophie had a point. If there was one person who could be trusted to accomplish a mission quickly, it was Hester. But it's Yuba's last dose, worried Agatha. How will he survive here? Think he'll be just fine, Sophie snorted. Agatha followed her eyes to the sea of girls, seated in front of the Blue Brooks Bridge, once made of stone, now replaced with rickety planks suspended by 2 thick ropes. The girls gaped in silence at the old gnome standing atop the rope bridge in a lavender dress and wobbly heels, his face completely obscured by bulbous red blisters, his hair hidden beneath a hideous babushka.
A highly contagious disease of indeterminate duration, so I encourage you to keep your distance,
Yuba huffed in his best Helga voice.
Now, given you may soon need to survive among boys, perhaps it is time to remind us all of the 5 rules.
He flashed a loaded look at Agatha, Sophie, and the witches as he wrote in the air with his smoking staff. 1. Girls soften, boys harden. 2. Girls reflect, boys react. 3. Girls express, boys suppress. 4. Girls desire, boys hunt. 5. Girls caution, boys ignore. Agatha grimaced. These are sexist and reductive. Says the girl ignored, suppressed, and hunted by her prince, Sophie replied. Agatha went quiet.
As you all know from your history classes last year, Inga trolls are lady trolls, most often found beneath bridges in Netherwood and Runyon Mills,
Yuba declared.
And just for today, beneath our very own.
The girls all peered under the bridge to see the other female group leaders uncage a bony, blindfolded troll with saggy skin scaled pink like a salmon's. It sat in a child's squat, tongue lolling idiotically, scratching hairy armpits and swallowing flies.
Inga trolls are quite fond of young men and will do anything to separate them from their beloveds,
Yuba continued, frowning at Yara as she ambled in and plopped in the front row.
If a couple steps foot on their bridge, an Inga troll will throw the girl off and let the boy pass unharmed. For today's challenge, then, each of you will try to cross our bridge without being ejected, a feat no ever girl or never girl has ever managed at this school.
He eyed Hester confidently.
But the truly exceptional student will succeed.
As all the girls lined up at the bridge, Agatha questioned how 120 girls could each take a turn by the time class ended, and got her answer when Yara took her first step and was flung squawking into the trees before she took another. Girl after girl barely made it past the first plank, hurled left and right by the hopping Inga troll, smacking her gums and wagging her bottom.
"Use the rules,"
Yuba berated, tightening his babushka. But they were no use either. Dot was pitched into the periwinkle pines, Anadil into the blue brook, and Hester into the fern field before Agatha was thrown off, fastest of all, into the turquoise thicket. "At least you got to the second plank," Agatha sighed to Hester, picking thorns out of her backside. "Looks like it's you after all."
"Yee-hi!"
They glanced up to see Sophie screeching and holding on for dear life to the rope bridge like a bull rider, while the Inga troll tried to fling her off. Sophie would have happily allowed this, except for a minor problem.
"My shoe!"
she bellowed, tugging frantically at her glass heel, trapped in a plank.
"It's stuck!"
"And you say she's changed?"
Hester frowned. "The old Sophie would have stopped Tedros from kissing me," said Agatha, wincing as Sophie unleashed a torrent of rather unfeminine words.
"And you believe her, that someone else caused her symptoms? That she's good now?"
"Doubting Sophie is the worst mistake I ever made. I put all of our lives at risk," Agatha said as the troll flipped the bridge and Sophie continued her wailing upside down. "I believe what I see now, Hester, and that's a friend willing to do anything to get me home safe." Hester paused, taking this in.
"Look, I'll endure this hideous spell and get you two home, but only if it's what you really want this time."
Agatha turned, surprised. For a moment, she forgot about the howling girl behind her.
"Will keeping Sophie make you happier than a prince?"
Hester said. Agatha looked away, tense. "Once upon a time, all I needed was a friend to be happy, Hester. Then I thought I needed more. It's the problem with fairy tales. From far away they seem so perfect, but up close they're just as complicated as real life." Hester glared at her.
"Will you be happier with her or a prince?"
"Tedros never loved me. If he loved me, he would have trusted me."
"Her or a prince?"
"I don't belong here. I don't belong with a prince,
Agatha."
"There's no choice anymore, Hester," Agatha cried, voice cracking. "There is no Tedros." Hester was speechless. Agatha recovered, managing a smile. "Besides, who could ever love me as much as Sophie?"
"Agatha! Help!"
Sophie's voice mewled, and the two girls turned back to see her straddling the bridge ropes like a demented ballerina. How that girl gets out of bed in the morning, I have no idea, Agatha sighed. Finally, the Inga Troll stopped shaking the bridge and tried to dislodge Sophie's foot from the shoe, only to receive a firm slap.
How rude! Sophie scolded the stunned troll. Even Cinderella's prince asked permission.
Sophie pried her shoe loose and smacked the troll with it.
And that's for causing trouble between perfectly happy pairs, she said, smiling at Agatha as the troll swelled furious red, about to smite her.
Sophie peered down at it.
You know, I used to be just like you.
The troll deflated, confused.
But now I have my friend back, Sophie whispered, a friend who makes me good.
She patted the troll's head.
One day, I hope you'll find a friend too.
She left the gaping creature behind and moseyed forward, settling on a rock to replace her shoe.
Now I see why Agatha wears those odious clumps.
Sophie realized where she was and bolted to her feet. Yuba was wide-eyed on the other side of the rope bridge.
No, no, no,
Sophie yelped, waving him off.
Each of the girls' rules disobeyed so skillfully that you've managed to convince the most discerning of monsters you're not a girl at all,
Yuba pipped. A gold one rank exploded over Sophie's head like a crown.
It was an accident, she cried, batting it away as all the other girls' ranks appeared.
But the gnome was giddily waddling towards his hole.
Looks like a girl. Acts like a girl. Who knew?
He babbled, grinning back at Sophie as smoke rose subtly from his staff into the air. 9 o'clock. Sophie turned green. Slowly, she looked down and saw Agatha and the witches even more gobsmacked than the rest of the class. Because the one girl who they could never, ever imagine surviving as a boy was about to become one. Chapter 16. A Boy by Any Other Name. It's what you always wanted, isn't it? A part big enough to hold you? Agatha prattled, slipping with Sophie through the tunnel of trees. And who better to play a part than you? Pulling her cloak tighter, Sophie raced ahead into the snow-sprinkled clearing, dimly lit by 2 torches on the blue forest gate. She'd insisted that the witches stay in the castle tonight. Having a gnome and her best friend there would be humiliation enough. Yuba had picked 9 o'clock, carefully, for most of the girls were bathing, at club meetings, or busy studying for the next trial tryouts, while the butterflies tended to settle on rafters or banisters in the foyer, dormant to everything but the most egregious noise. With Beatrix at elf fluency lessons and the dean in her office, they'd have enough time to go through with the plan. How Agatha would explain her friend's disappearance, Sophie asked repeatedly, but her friend shooed the questions away, no doubt because she didn't have the answers.
You might even enjoy being a boy, Agatha gibbered on, clumps crunching onto snow. Think of it as a costume. Think of it as a show. Only the audience is trying to kill me, Sophie growled.
She heard her friend's clump crunches slow behind her. How can I leave you alone with him? Agatha whispered, shivering in her cloak. Sophie stood still, listening to the Valor Tower clock toll and fade, snowflakes smothering against her neck.
Everything good in me is because of you, Agatha. Isn't it time I did something good for you, too?
She turned to see Agatha. Snow caked in torchlight and smiling crookedly like she had in those first days as friends. So surprised, Sophie wanted to spend time with her.
I'll owe you one, all right, Agatha said, eyes glistening. Even if I have to sing in your musical.
Sophie cracked a smile back. They both noticed Yuba's white staff poking out of a hole in the distance, wagging impatiently.
Listen, try to get on tower guard. That's how you'll get to the pen.
Agatha jabbered again as she gripped Sophie's